Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Aliens Surrender by Ella Maven. Narrated by Gabriel McKnight and Reagan West.
Chapter 1. Vince. Chewing on a stalk of sweetgrass, I lounged in the crook of a tree high above the ground, watching the four-legged creatures below sniff around. They got a whiff of me, but couldn't figure out where I was. Maybe because they didn't have eyes. Just round skulls with large oval ears, nostrils the size of my fist, and a lipless mouth full of crooked teeth. Hunched back and hairy, they stalked among the vegetation on silent bony paws. Every once in a while, one would stop and sit up on its haunches with its nose in the air. I crossed my arms over my chest. My hunch that we had way bigger problems on this planet than those ugly Wutark flecks was right. In fact, I was starting to think the Wutarks were a diversion. I couldn't understand why they were so adamant about their borders. Why did it matter if we shared the plentiful game and resources of Corin? But now, as I watched the handlers of the Nosehounds approach, it all began to make sense. The Wutarks were merely an obstacle meant to stop us from searching this planet further. Because here, far past the Wutark border that I promised never to cross, was an enemy who looked ready for war. I'd never seen them before, and I had no idea what they called themselves. One stopped at the base of my tree, and I craned my neck to get a better look. Standing as tall as me on two stocky legs, he fiddled with the collar on his Nosehound with two lower arms, while his upper arms were rounded with muscles at the shoulder and ended in wide bony plates tipped with talons. He wore a type of chain armor over a thick leathery skin, a deep red color. His skull was shaped like an upside-down triangle, with two white points tapering into horns wider than his broad shoulders. His entire face was flat as a board, except for bulging oval eyes. Coiled at their waists were long translucent whips that glowed a putrid green. I wasn't winning any beauty contests, but these flat-nosed flecks were hideous. Their language sounded like antelope meat roasting on a fire, sizzling and hissing as they called to each other. I'd lied to Kutsal, my Drexel, when I told him there was a border breach. There was no such thing. But a buzz at the back of my neck wouldn't let up, and I couldn't sit in camp another day. I didn't always listen to my intuition, but it was rarely wrong. My search led me here, and while I was in the mood to make something bleed and shed a little of my own blood, I had to stay alive long enough to report to Kutsal. We'd have to find their camp and get a sense of how large this settlement was. Were we talking a few fringe warriors, a familial camp, or an entire flecking army? Corin really went to flex since we left, I murmured to myself. The Nosehound below reacted to my voice, its head lifting into the air while its snout bobbed to scent the breeze. I sneered at it and stayed still, my least favorite position. I liked to be doing. Lucent was the observing type, but he was probably busy pining for his little human now. I rolled my eyes, remembering how infatuated he was with her. But surely she was in our capital Granite now, and the head Drexel of the Drexonians were likely parading a bunch of proper warriors in front of her as possible mates. My lip curled as I imagined Lucent's pain. Maybe after this was over, I'd go steal her for him. Would I get in trouble? Absolutely. Did I care? No. Because my goal in life was to make things interesting. Boredom was my least favorite activity, which was why sitting in this flecking tree was making my scales itch. Our creed, she is all, was the only reason I gave a fleck about the human females who had been abducted and brought to our galaxy. And the only reason I cared about the creed was because it meant so much to my fellow warriors who were like brothers, like Lucent and Kutsal. When I searched deep in my sola for an actual fleck about the females, I couldn't find one. none of them really interested me. Although, I did love teasing Luke Kent about his obvious care for Tasha. If our creed was trees are all, then I would have put my life on the line for some flecking tree if that was what my brothers wanted. Other than that, my duty gave me purpose, and I'd fulfill that purpose while I was still alive. In fact, the duty for my brothers was truly the only thing keeping me from jumping off a cliff into the freshets. A threat to our human females was a threat to my brothers, and that was why I would always be willing to put myself on the front line. Eventually, the flat-faced guards and their nosehounds retreated, but I didn't dare move until the sun was setting, and I hadn't seen movement for what felt like half a day. I dropped down to the ground, landing in a nearly soundless crouch before rising to my feet. The dense foliage prevented me from seeing where the strangers had gone. More than anything, I wanted to chase them down, but I could hear Kutsal's voice in my head telling me to head home. Sighing and pushing aside the itch to fight, I turned on my heel to return to camp. I had taken one step when my eye caught movement. Stopping, I stared at a long lock of hair that was snagged on a tree branch and now swaying in the slight breeze. It wasn't like my straight black hair, and the strangers I'd seen were hairless. I reached out and touched the soft strands. Curly and the color of gold, the lock slipped through my fingers like a warm breath. I sucked in a breath as my chest hollowed out and my Korra pounded loudly in my ears. This hair wasn't of this planet! Freeing the hair from the branch, I clutched the strands in my palm. Somewhere out there was the owner of this hair. I wasn't sure about many things in my life, but I was sure of two things. I wouldn't live long, and before I died, I had to find who this hair belonged to. Taking the golden hair, I wove it into a braid at the nape of my neck so it would be hidden under my massive dark hair. Then, ignoring Kutsal's voice in my head, I set off in the direction the flat-faced strangers had gone. There was no explanation for this hair to be there. They had to have something to do with it. Were they protecting their females? Something else? I walked until the sun set and my eyes adjusted to the darkness. It was then I saw the flickering of lights ahead, casting shadows off a large, crude structure. Careful of the nosehounds, I scaled a tree to get a better look. Standing tall, surrounded by a deep ditch, was a gated fortress. Flat-faced guards walked a pathway at the top of a wall, and a few nosehounds lounged near the gate, chewing loudly on meaty carcasses. I didn't linger long there, and began to make my way around the perimeter of the fortress on foot. The walls were as high as the three-story buildings in granite, and made of a thick, dense stone. Around the back was a large tower with a few barred windows. There, I climbed another tree, placing me nearly eye level with the lowest window. I waited, never taking my eyes off the window as it was my only look into the fortress. A few times, I caught a flat-faced guard looking out, but I was hidden, camouflaged by the blue foliage around me. Legs cramping in my crouched position, head aching from concentrating, I was contemplating taking a nap and waiting until morning when a new face entered the window. Pale skin, small nose, and big round eyes all framed in a mass of golden curls. A human female. My world spun. Bark splintered under my claws as I dug them into the tree in an effort to keep myself still. Within this fortress, these flat-faced flecks had a human female, the owner of the golden curls woven into my own hair. She blinked slowly, tilting her face toward the light of the moon. I stared at the soft curve of her jaw and the line of her pale neck, only marred by a metal collar that reddened her skin. A loud voice barked, and the face paled before disappearing in the blink of an eye. I remained poised in the same spot, gaze on the window, never leaving my post. But the human never returned. Barred inside this crude structure, guarded by the flat-faced warriors and their nosehounds, the female was a collared prisoner. I ignored Kutsal's voice in my head, telling me to return home. What was the fun in that? This was what we did, after all. Put our lives on the line for females. And frankly, I was really curious about this fortress. I told myself that was what this was about, not my interest in the human with the golden hair. She was like all the other females, an untouchable flower behind a glass vase that I never got to touch but had to protect with bloodshed. I spent the rest of the night studying the entire perimeter of the structure for a way inside, but the entire place was an impenetrable stone wall. The only way in was the front gate, and the only way to get into the front gate was to be taken in. I hid my axe in a spot outside the walls, so no fucking way would I let it be taken. Cracking my neck and rolling my shoulders, I made my way toward the front gates.
Amber. The Joktal dropped an additional bowl of gruel on my tray with a clatter. When he spoke, his rancid breath ignited my gag reflex. New captive in last cell on the left. I glanced at the furred Loris ladling the gruel into bowls. When we made eye contact, she made a discreet flicking motion beneath her chin that I'd learned meant to be wary. I gritted my teeth. The last time they'd told me they had a new captive, I'd nearly gotten my hand bitten off. I, along with about a dozen Loris, were all captives too. But we'd been deemed harmless and easy labor, so we were put to work rather than left to rot in a cell. Gripping the tray, I followed a Joktal guard named Higo down a narrow hallway until we reached the tower stairs. There, I snatched a precious moment to shuffle to the barred window and peered outside. Inhaling deeply, I listened to the breeze rustle the trees just outside the fortress walls. I exhaled and rounded my lips, blowing out a puff of air. Somewhere, I imagined my friend Tasha catching my scent and running to rescue me. An absolute pipe dream, I knew, but it didn't stop me from trying every chance I could get. I fingered a spot on the back of my head where new hair had started growing. Somewhere out there, a clump of my hair fluttered off a tree branch. Just another clue I'd tried to leave behind for someone. Anyone. I wasn't sure how long I'd been here. I tried to make marks on the wall, but Higo had scratched over them just to be a dick. I estimated about a week, even though it felt like a year. I still wore the clothes I'd arrived in, the leather pants Nev had sewed with her own hands, and the shirt left over from my former captors. It was thanks to them that I had a translator implant behind my ear. The Joktals had seen it upon my arrival and quickly updated their language onto it. I resented that I understood their commands. Move! Higo barked at me. I hated all the Joktal, but Higo had a special place of resentment in my heart. Taking one last look outside, I scurried down the stairs with two of the Loris, Yua and Yoa, on my heels. The Loris were all around 3 to 5 feet and covered in a soft blue and cream striped fur. With eyes like flies, they cleaned them with a cluster of antennae on their foreheads. They walked silently on soft paw pads and only spoke in gestures, along with some occasional mews of distress or titters of laughter. I hadn't been able to learn their full language yet, just a few gestures here and there, so I didn't know their story or how they came to be here. However, they were kind to me and treated me well, making sure I ate and even let me cuddle with them in our large, empty sleeping chamber, as their furry bodies were better than any blanket. At the bottom of the stairs, Higo unlocked the door leading to the cells and shoved me through. I nearly dropped the tray and would have turned to glare at him, but last time I did that, I'd earned a split lip. So instead, I clenched my jaw and righted the tray without spilling a drop. A furred paw landed on the small of my back, and I turned to find Yua scrunching her nose like a rabbit and puffing out air from her nostrils. The action was their form of comfort. And while it had been alarming at first, I now found it appealing. I smiled at her, and she wiggled her pointed ears on the top of her head. Quick! Hugo leaned against the wall and crossed his thick arms over his chest. Right. I started down the hallway, with barred cells on either side. A small door at the bottom of each one opened, and that was where I placed the gruel while collecting the bowls from the previous day. Some of the captives scuttled forward immediately to take their daily ration, while others remained huddled in the corner of their cell, the previous day's food uneaten. Yuo and Yua walked with me, helping to gather yesterday's bowls. The captives were a mix of species I'd never seen before, not that I had much experience in this galaxy. I'd lived years in an underground lab, being poked and prodded as an experiment before escaping with a few fellow human females to this planet. Just the thought of my friends had me nearly doubling over, as the grief after losing them was an acute physical pain. I hadn't even felt that way when I'd been taken from Earth, but the bond I'd formed with loyal Tasha, fierce Trix, the bratty Lou and Maisie, and the quiet, stoic Nev was unlike anything I'd ever had before in my life. I'd been content to live out the rest of my days with them on this planet. We'd really had what felt like the beginning of a comfortable life just within our grasp. The settlement we'd found had been quiet, with enough game to sustain us, and it had been safe. Or so we thought, until we'd been attacked in the middle of the night by some warthog alien assholes and separated. I was the only one taken here, at least as far as I knew. Within this fortress, I'd been confined only to this tower, working to clean, cook for the Joktal, and take care of their prisoners. I reached the last prisoner, at least the last prisoner as of yesterday, but there was still one last cell at the end of the hallway. I glanced back at Hugo, and he pointed to it. Keep going! I blew out a breath and glanced at Yua and Yuo. They both rubbed the antenna over their large eyes and stared back silently. Okay, I murmured. Let's do this. I took careful steps, Dolores right behind me, to the last cell. Keeping my distance from the bars, I stopped and peered inside. Farthest away from the flickering torches on the wall, this was the darkest cell, and for a moment, I thought it was empty. But then a very slight movement caught my eye in the back corner of the cell. A large body lay on its side, back to us, ribs rising and falling with deep breaths. I took a bowl off the tray and settled it on the ground as silently as I could. The edge caught on the corner of the bar with a clang, and I froze in a crouch at the sharp sound. The body twitched and then stilled. Letting out a relieved breath, I slowly removed my hand from the edge of the bowl. As I made to rise, the body suddenly lurched to its feet and whirled around in a mass of dark hair and mottled skin. I let out a shriek, falling back on my ass as the body surged forward. The tray slammed to the ground, and the bowls hit the stone with a bang. 2 5-fingered hands, tipped with sharp black claws, gripped the bars, and then a blue face appeared between, punctuated by glowing violet eyes. He'd been beat to shit, which was no surprise. One eye was nearly swollen shut. Black blood dripped from his temple, and his lips were split in about 3 places. I stared up at the alien as Dolores scuffled behind me with alarmed squealing. He ignored them, only watching me. And I swallowed as his massive black pupils seemed to dilate to nearly obliterate the purple. His skin was covered in mottled blue and black scales, kind of like a snake skin, and he had a large silver piercing through the septum of his nose. He was the most human-like alien I'd seen on this planet, but he was still very much not human. The longer his gaze lingered, the more I found it hard to breathe. My skin broke out in goosebumps, and my entire scalp tingled. He rasped out one word in a low, growly timbre. "Glitch-co." I swallowed as my stomach knotted. I didn't know what he meant, but there was something there. Something sentient and aware in his eyes that didn't exist in any other of the captives here, not even in the Loris. Suddenly a hand gripped my neck and hauled me to my feet. Higo's breath flooded my nostrils, just as he flung out his whip and cracked it. Charged with a current, the coil sizzled in the air. "You're lucky she didn't drop your bowl, or you wouldn't get another one, Trixonian," he snapped. The blue alien drew back his full lips, causing a few drops of blood to leak out of a cut, and snapped his fanged teeth at Higo. Higo sneered. "You like this one?" He shook me so hard my teeth rattled, and to my shame, a whimper escaped. The blue alien, a Trixonian, leered and lashed out a long tongue studded with three ball piercings down the middle. He spat out a few words in my direction, which sounded insulting, threatening, and disgusted. A shiver ran down my spine at his tone. "Ah, so, only for your own females then, huh? Too bad, they're all dead." Higo let out his throaty chuckle, which was nothing short of terrifying. The Trixonian's eyes flashed a bright neon purple, before he slammed a fist into the bar so hard, I swore they'd bend. I jerked at the sound, half expecting him to come crashing through like the Kool-Aid Man. But the metal bars held. Higo dropped me, and I hit the ground on my knees, hard. His foot slammed into my thigh, and I bit down on my tongue so hard I drew blood. "Clean this up," he ordered, before sauntering away. The Loris dropped down beside me, and we scrambled to grab the bowls, some of which had rolled away. When all the bowls were on the tray, I rose to my feet, favoring my left thigh, where Higo had kicked. Feeling eyes on me, I risked one last glance into the Trixonian's cage. He was standing at the back, on 2 feet, wearing only a pair of ratty pants with his hands fisted at his sides. His muscled chest heaved, and his thick neck bulged with veins. And again, those nearly black eyes were on me, no longer filled with disgust or anger. If anything, he looked anguished. Yua placed her paw on my arm, and I shook my head and broke our stare. Walking back down the hallway on unsteady legs, it took everything in me not to run back to that cell and try to puzzle out this mysterious Trixonian.
Chapter 2. Vins. I'd found her. I could barely believe my luck. I'd expected to have to endure a lot more beatings from the Joktal before I found a way to get free and search this tower for her. But she was here. I'd been so shocked to see her that I'd scared the fleck out of her. But that was good. I couldn't let Higo know I favored her, because then he'd certainly use her against me. And really, she should be scared of me. I wasn't gentle Lu Kent, or authoritative Kutsal, or even Keeled Axton. My moods were unpredictable, my tongue sharp, and I didn't know how to be anything other than aggressive. I watched her walk away until she was out of sight. Only then did I realize I had my face pressed against the bars of my cell, painfully trying to get one last glimpse of her. I growled to myself and retreated to the back of my cell with the bowl of gruel. It tasted like nothing, but was surprisingly filling. I had no idea what it was made of, but I was sure I'd eaten worse. I'd been a baby when my father deserted the Drixonian army, sealing my fate with a lifetime of suffering. Back when we'd lived on Corrin in a thriving society, punishment for desertion lasted a generation. I was considered a son of naught. Nothing. No one. The bloodline had to end with me. My mother couldn't take the shame and ended her own life, leaving a squawking chit Vins alone. So yeah, I'd eaten absolutely shit in my life, and it had only gotten worse when our females died, society crumbled, and we began working for the Uldani. As a son of naught, I didn't get a cushy assignment as a bodyguard for the children of the Uldani elite. Only my Kutsal, Lukent, Axton, and a few other sons of naught knew what I'd been put through, and I preferred to keep it that way. It was in the past, and it was my business. Now, we were back on Corrin, after defeating the Uldani and trying to rebuild our society. But the only females were the abducted human females we'd saved. They all lived at Granite with proper Drixonian mates, proper warriors who'd trained and were raised to be the future of society. Not like me. The human's face came to mind. Big eyes and pale skin and that curly hair. I hadn't seen many females with that color of hair, but then they tended to keep me away from the humans. Higo had kicked her, and she'd barely flinched, which led me to believe it wasn't the first time he'd struck her. But why was she here? And was she the only female? Tasha had said there had been a total of 6 of them, but so far I'd only seen the one with golden hair. The pain of the beating subsided as my brain mulled over the situation. The good news? This was sure as fleck not boring. Well, being locked up sucked, but the Joktal gave me enough attention. Sure, it was painful, but whatever. And got me out of the cell enough that I had a chance to look around. We were in the tallest tower of the fortress, and when they questioned me, I was taken to a room they called the Locker. It wasn't exciting, just a chair and some chains. Their questions were telling, though. Why are you in our borders? Who knows you're here? How many warriors strong is your army? They also wanted specific locations of the Drixonian camps. Like fleck I was going to tell them anything. And the more I avoided their questions and laughed at their frustration, the more fun the beatings got. I had to admit, their bony plated hands were some massive weapons. I would have to talk to our weapons maker about recreating something like that. I didn't let myself think I'd die here. I knew I'd die eventually, and likely soon, but it wasn't going to be here. Not me. Not Vin's not. I had to die in some grand way, where I sacrificed myself for my brothers, not a female. A female was only a means to the end to fulfilling my duty to my brothers, who saved my life more than once. Lukent and Kutsal deserved long lives and the best chances at happiness, so I'd do everything I could to ensure that happened. The first step was finding out what the fleck these Joktals wanted, and the next step was rescuing the human with golden hair. I finished my gruel and settled into the dark corner of my cell for some sleep. Once I got some rest and healed a little, I'd work on doing some digging. It wasn't fair that the Joktal thought they could get all the information out of me. I had to strategize, because there had to be a way I could use my beatings to my advantage. It sure beat the monotony of pain anyway. I crossed my arms over my chest and closed my eyes. Hopefully, when I woke up again, I'd get to see the golden-haired human. It wasn't that I was interested in her, of course. She was just something to look at to pass the time, was all. Sure. That was it.
Amber. Every movement felt like I was dragging my limbs through quicksand. I'd already fought sleep for longer than usual, but I was terrified to let myself close my eyes and rest. My body wasn't the same as all those years ago when I'd been stolen from Earth, transported on an alien ship. and then taken underground to a city by...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?